I would suggest that most states and probably the federal government from the agency standpoint suffer the same challenge, and that is with limited public resources. It is far too common that when times are tough or when you have to make difficult decisions, near the front of the line are those that affect citizens directly. How many staff do we have on the ground in case of an emergency, or educating our kids, or providing health care? The folks that are responsible for managing the back office, the IT infrastructure, that tends not to have as many stakeholders or constituents that are actively in support. So for most of us in the public sector, the guts of running government is information, and that information needs a robust infrastructure, and it's very hard for us to compete for resources. What Virginia did, and I'd say the single biggest reason why we are humbled with the kind of recognition you're referencing, is that we had established a policy foundation that gave us some unique flexibility. That foundation was a concept known as a public-private partnership. And what that meant was is that if a private organization had a creative idea that would not necessarily increase the state's costs but could reprioritize or capture some of the efficiencies, that idea could come forward without the kind of traditional government program requirements and procurement that you'd otherwise see. We had documented the fact that our IT systems were inadequate, our security was lacking, and that, heck, for most of our staff, we were working on 8 to 10-year-old PCs.
Mm-hmm.
So we were pleased that the private sector stepped up. I guess the long answer to your simple question, we were blessed by a private sector that said, we believe if we flatlined how much money you're spending today to manage your IT infrastructure, and we could do that over 10 years, we would be willing to front the upfront capital requirements to modernize the operation, and to the extent that we can deliver efficiencies that produce savings in the later years of the partnership, we could make enough money to pay back our capital investment, earn a modest return for shareholders, and ensure value to the Commonwealth by having increased security and so forth. And that's what happened. We were able to negotiate a comprehensive agreement with Northrop Grumman. It turned into a $270 million upfront capital investment to modernize our infrastructure. And now we are entering our third year of transformation, and we're very pleased with the improvements, especially in the area of IT security.
That's an interesting partnership, because you don't think of a relationship like that in the typical vendor-customer relationship. That's not how it usually works.
That's correct. And I'm sure there was some serendipity involved, that there were some strategic decisions on the part of Northrop where they were going to make some investments. And so if they were going to make some investments in data centers and so forth, doing so through the collaboration might have made sense. Unclear how many other similar investments could be made in a tough economy, but I think the model is strong, and I'm very pleased to see that it's operational in Virginia. We're hopeful that other states would follow.
You actually anticipated my next question, Mr. Chopra. How replicable do you think that model is? Is this something that could work in a number of different environments, both technological environments and economic environments?
Well, you know, the core of the deal, which says that your current approach to infrastructure is inefficient, my gut instinct is that is a true statement for probably 98% of our public organizations. In fact, even the private sector. I don't want to suggest this is a private or public problem. It's that traditionally the back office doesn't get the kind of attention that normally companies spend on the front office. So as a result, if someone would say to you, I understand there's an efficiency, I'm willing to evaluate what it would take to remove that inefficiency, and I'm so willing to commit to that savings, that I'm willing to front the capital necessary to deliver on those savings, that basic mathematical transaction should be replicable in every community. The problem is all about political will, and for some degree it's a matter of control and concern about whether or not this increases our risks. And we've been very proud in Virginia to mitigate a lot of those risks and to we've done something that puts us in a better position. But it's a tough call for most. It's not in your DNA.
Yeah, to be able to sit down and negotiate something like that, I think that's as much an element of it when you talk about the typical, as I said, typical vendor-customer relationship when it comes to a private company and a public entity like a government.
Well, it's procurement, frankly. I think the enemy in these circumstances that our traditional approach to procurement, you know, buying a piece of furniture, I can tell you the requirement. It's got to be a certain number of feet high. It's got to have four legs. I can tell you what I need. Modernizing my infrastructure, my goodness, writing a requirements document for that might be just a nightmare.
Yeah.
Our model allowed for a conceptual procurement. That is, we had a series of business goals. We wanted to have a modern infrastructure. We wanted to have a tightly secure network and so forth. That we could establish these principles and enter negotiation around those principles and work the details through the negotiation, as opposed to what most of us do. We have to go out and document every little detail of what we want in, and then the contract is all about what's in, what's out. Our conceptual framework gives us a heck of a lot more flexibility. Frankly, I think we ended up in a better place than what you'd get from traditional procurement.
Talking to Anish Chopra, he is the Secretary of Technology in the state of Virginia, about successes that he's had, his state being recognized number one in the country for IT management information security by the National Association of State Chief Information Officers. Do you know if NASIO has any kind of interaction with the federal government's CIO Council?
Very much so. I believe, I want to make a couple of just clarifying notes. For most states, we have chief information officers, and it depends on your governance structure. They run the operations of the infrastructure. Virginia has a chief information officer, Lem Stewart, who's been ably essentially leading the partnership from the operational standpoint. What we have in Virginia is a cabinet structure that sits above these operational units that fights for the policy goals. And what we've done is essentially doubled down on innovation in Virginia. Most states try to combine that into one function, and that makes it more complicated for them to execute. I would say ditto at the federal level. The CIOs at the most common agencies where I've found relationship tend to have an operational responsibility. The policy-making side is where you get into the debate, procurement versus innovation, how we bring about public-private partnership, and balancing that in one individual is difficult. So NASIO, as an organization, has had a great working relationship with their operational counterparts, and our challenge has been getting the leadership at the executive branch levels, whether they be CIOs or secretaries of technology, engaged with policymakers at the federal level. And that's been something we've worked through, both through NASIO and through the Governors Association and others.
There's a kind of a buzz in the community, the federal IT community, about the possibility of a new position being created, that of Chief Technology Officer, which I imagine would be the same or similar situation to the job that you hold on the state level in Virginia, for somebody to be a technology kind of guru, not just determining technology policy within the federal government, but helping the president, whether it's Senator Obama or Senator McCain, to determine technology policy for the country. Do you have that kind of influence with Governor Kaine, or is it your job in Virginia just to advocate for what the state government needs in the IT realm?
No, in fact, and I would be shy to describe myself as a guru, but that is in fact why the governor had hired me. I have three responsibilities. One is, of course, to make sure that our policies to run the operations are effective. So to the extent that Lem, my colleague, the chief information officer, says I need some policy support in an area, I am his advocate. But the two other areas are where you're going, which is how do we transform the delivery of government services? What does a Web 2.0 world mean when it comes to renewing your driver's license or applying for a passport or interfacing with government in a number of areas? That is a collaboration. I co-chair the Office of Health IT with the Secretary of Health and Human Resources. I do the same with education on 21st century learning. So we have that collaborative spirit because we need to have someone that looks towards the capabilities of our 21st century economy and can apply them to the public sector. And then my third area of focus is to ensure that job opportunities in the technology sector are available to all Virginians. And so we pride ourselves on having a very technology-rich economy, and I am the advocate for that sector in the governor's strategy. So ensuring our universities have research dollars, ensuring entrepreneurs have access to early stage capital, and focusing our energy on the areas that are of great national importance, energy security, homeland security, healthcare, and obviously the area of biotechnology and the like. So we're very excited about these opportunities and see that as an important role. I give my hats off to those working on the notion of a chief technology officer at the federal government. I think it's well-deserved as a concept, and we'd love to see it implemented.
If you were going to see it implemented, we're going to give you autonomy over that for just a moment, Mr. Chopra. what do you think somebody in that position at the federal level should be able to have some say over, in addition to those three elements about your job that you just talked about?
Well, I would. My gut instinct is that really, that job is a preparing for the future job. And if I could think of no other simple expression of what that job would be, I would describe it as the new product development chief. To the extent that we think about how we interface with government, to the extent that we think about the big challenges ahead, you know, in the private sector, there are folks there who wake up every day thinking about how they would reinvent the company in which they're operating. That function does not typically exist in the public sector. We don't have market competitors that are forcing us to rethink how we deliver the services we deliver. So we need to create that sense of innovation, that spirit of innovation. And so I would suggest that if I can simplify, it would be a new products development officer whose job it is to cook new ideas in an incubation lab and to make them available and then hopefully seed them for rollout. You know, I'm a big fan of Google, and if you visit Google Labs, you can see all the great new ideas that the staff are working on that you could play around with before they launch them.
Mm-hmm.
We need to have a Google Labs for federal government and even at state and local levels, and I think that's what is at the heart of this CTO concept.
Kind of a technological Manhattan Project.
Well, there's a lot that needs to be done, as we can see by all the recent challenges in the news, the national challenges, and even at our local level. We're woefully inadequate in data security. We're woefully inadequate in the use of technology to modernize healthcare, education. Our energy grid is still very analog. So, yes, there's a lot to be done.
All right, so you've got all these great ideas, and you've got all these innovations that you are ready to put in place, and you also have, I imagine, in Richmond, a bureaucracy that's been established over a number of years, and maybe some folks within that that are not as interested in change as you are. How do you work within that kind of a framework and apply this kind of innovation model to something that is not known for its responsiveness to innovation?
You know, it's ironic you mention that, because that would be the assumption you would have going in. In January of 2007, Governor Kaine was gracious enough to offer me the chance to lead a new idea we called the Productivity Investment Fund. He gave me $3 million, and he said, I want you to seed transformative ideas, ideas that are going to change the way we deliver health care and education and so forth. And I did what I would imagine many of the folks would do, which is I opened up the kimono and I said, anybody that has an idea, anybody, state employee, university member, private sector, anybody on the street, you are welcome to come forward with your ideas, that we're not going to go through a bureaucratic procurement process. You bring your ideas forward and we're going to execute on those ideas. We have a portfolio of over 30 projects. The vast majority of them came from state employees who are hungry for change, eager to see things work, but traditionally, if they wanted a little bit of seed capital to bring an idea to fruition, they'd have to put it into the budget process. And you and I both know the budget process does not reward innovative concepts. It tends to focus on big projects that need lots of dollars and everything else gets starved.
Yeah.
So by creating an alternative financing model, a little bit of money, a modest pool of $3 million, we've uncovered just dozens of ideas that have been from web-based distance learning services that can allow you to take university classes at home to changing the way we run our applications process for filling out forms for starting businesses, all with a modest amount of capital that are expected to deliver a 6-to-1 return on taxpayer investment. More state employees have better ideas than anybody else would actually think, and you just got to tap into that energy. In fact, I would challenge the folks listening here, we have a website, www.ideas.virginia.gov. Tell us what you think we can do to make government more efficient, and then vote the ideas up or down using a voting arrow so that you can see your ideas peer-reviewed, if you will, and then obviously, hopefully, incubated in our lab and cooked out for the public.